Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed, and happy Father's Day, a day late to all you guys out there. And Eric, what'd you guys do around the house on this weekend? Or
well, I fished two moles out of the pool,
like with a fishing pole?
No, just a great big net.
Oh, you don't like, they're not swimming and you're like fishing for them?
No, yeah, well, they go in to get a drink and can't get out.
Oh, yeah.
Mowed, rode my bike, built a swing set.
It was hot, man.
It was freaking hot.
What did you like? How many miles?
14.
In this heat?
In the heat, yeah. Yeah, it was brutal, man.
Oh, what is that? That's be like, from here in Anderson, that would be south of Pendleton?
Probably.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are listening to this, probably don't even know what that is. But yeah, it's hot. Like when I pulled in here today into the studio, I got out of my truck and looked, and the temperature outside was 94 and the heat index was 101.
Good grief.
I literally ran outside to mow my grass because I knew I was going to have to. It was like 1 o'clock today, and I've got a push mower, right? It's not a riding lawnmower.
Ugh.
And it was so dusty in the backyard because there's a spot where the grass isn't growing, and I was just covered. So I jumped in and got a quick shower, and here we are.
Here we are.
Here we are. A squirrel update. What do we got?
Okay, so I've implemented all of the suggestions that the listeners provided, and there have been no more attacks. I've not seen Kevin either, and there's been no more huge limbs down, but I did find the nest, so I'm trying to decide how to proceed. Maybe that's a, I don't know, Bowen, maybe, I don't know. I don't know if there's a way to get it down because it's way up in like a great big maple.
Yeah, and if they're making it through some of these, you know, 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts that we get out of here.
Yeah. Well, he's rather chunky, so he's holding it down.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of chunky, here's kind of an update. I mentioned, I think it was last week, I don't know. I for fun, I got into this competition. I was that Muscle and Fitness magazine when I was a kid. I used to read it, and they have this competition going on called Mr. Muscle and Fitness. You can be the next Mr. Muscle and Fitness. And we were sitting on the couch, and I was like, hey, this would be kind of funny. Just see what would happen. And I ended up being accepted, and then I made it in the top 20, made it in the top 15. Each one of these weeks, you know, competitions, knock off five each week. Made it the top 10, top five. And then I made it into the wild card round because evidently the two first places, you can only have one first place. I was so close with the other guy, they did a wild card and had one other guy, so it was three of us. And I found out today at 1 o'clock that I won that. And it's kind of funny because I made a post about it. And I said, it's never over till the fit lady sings. I thought that was creative.
That's nice. That's nice. Very creative.
It's never over till the fit lady sings. But hey, for those of you who are supporting me through social media, you've seen those posts. And I know there's a bunch of you out there that were voting because it's something you go online. You'll see it if you want to go to my Facebook page, you know, under Brent Henderson, you can find me. And me and I really would appreciate it. It's just a platform, to be honest with you. It's a way to encourage people to stay fit, you know, body, soul, spirit, not just fitness-wise. But and it's a way to reach men because a lot of guys, you know, they do respect. You know, if you walk the walk, talk the talk, it does build respect and trust. And it just gives me a platform to be able to reach, hopefully, more men. So anyhow, thank you guys. And I'll put a link up in the podcast. Just for that. So you guys, if you're looking for it, you don't know where to go, I can just kind of throw that up there.
Yeah, you vote. Everybody vote, please. It helps.
It's going to take a village. I'm 63, and I was going up against guys that were 19 and 20 years old.
Wow.
And in the wild card round, there was, get this, the guy that was number two, I was number one, he was in USA Today in 2007, I think it was, because he was like the biggest loser kind of a thing. He lost all this weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was all these pictures and magazine covers. I saw his stuff. You know, hats off to you. I don't know, you probably never hear this. I wish I could remember your name, but you inspired me to show what can be done when we get our mind in the right place, when we want to make a difference. So Unleashed Men, you know, we have the Unleashed podcast. Unleashed Men, if you're interested in kind of being in conversations, you know, off air, that would be the private Facebook page. It's men only. We talk about, you know, issues that we all struggle with, and we get on there and encourage and pray for each other. But it's called, Unleashed Men. And I went on there this morning, and I asked the guys, I said, hey, what are your top five men's movies? You know, and what character would you be in that favorite movie you picked? You know, and why would you want to be them? And it was kind of cool because you know, sometimes guys, they'll interact. Sometimes they won't. You know, sometimes if you ask kind of like a feeling kind of a question, you know, guys just don't really get into it. But you start talking about their favorite sports teams or about hunting or fishing, not for moles, but, you know. But you start talking about like their favorite movies. Oh, listen. Oh, this is from the movie we got coming today, isn't it? You would do that to me right at the front. The movie, I'll explain, that was from Braveheart, and we're going to break that down. And you know, when I was asking all these guys to pick their favorite movie, I made a list. Here's some of the lists the guys picked. And it's so funny because most of these picks that they give, I just said, give me your favorite movies. There was only a couple guys that mentioned like a comedy or maybe a drama. There was nothing like, you know, what was it called? The Notebook. There's nothing like that with guys.
Yeah, thankfully. Good grief.
I love watching it with my wife. I understand. I love my wife.
Ugh.
But sometimes you just need guy time, right?
Yeah.
Like just getting with a bunch of, whether I'm hunting or fishing, I say that all the time. I called my buddy Tim the other day and I said, man, I just need some guy time. But here's a list. So the guys kind of list. I used to do something when I was on staff at a church in Pennsylvania. That was kind of weird. Years ago, and I called it Monday Night Movies for Men. And we would come in. I had a little theater set up in this little off room at the church. And I had a list of questions I would make from the movies. We'd get pizza and chips, you know, and kind of thing, and just kind of break it down. So that's kind of what we're doing with the podcast today and next week. We're going to be doing Braveheart both weeks. But here's a list. So here's the guys that the movies that the guys picked. And I'll just kind of, there's no alphabetical thing here, but Braveheart, that was at the very top. Tombstone, I'll Be Your Huckleberry.
Oh, that's a good one.
Top Gun, I Feel the Need.
Oh, yeah.
The Need for Speed. Gladiator, What We Do in This Life Echoes in the Halls of Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell I've seen any of these, can you?
Can't.
Remember Lone Survivor, Marcus Luttrell? He's that over, there's four of those guys. They're doing a special op to take out a leader.
Yeah.
And they lose contact.
True story, right?
It's a true story, yeah. The Patriot, Aim Small, Miss Small. Last of the Mohicans. Why, that's a Daniel Day-Lewis. Great.
Never seen that one.
Oh.
I don't think I've seen, what was the one before?
The Patriot?
I don't think I've seen The Patriot or Dances.
Oh, those are two of my top 10 for sure would be Patriot and Last of the Mohicans. The Bourne Identity.
Okay.
Remember there was the Bourne Identity, Bourne Supremacy, a whole series?
Yeah, there's a whole series, yep.
Band of Brothers was awesome. There was the Pacific version of that too. Dances with Wolves, Kevin Costner.
Never seen
First Blood.
Rambo.
Oh, yeah. Rambo, First Blood. Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Die Hard.
Oh, yeah.
Rocky.
Oh, yeah.
The Outlaw, Josie Wales. You going to pull them pistols or whistle Dixie? The 12 Horsemen, Ghosts in the Darkness, Saving Private Ryan. That's one of my top 10. And, of course, Dirty Harry. Can't get away from the Clint Eastwood movies. Those were just...
Dirty Harry, though, that is a terrible movie.
Remember the 44 Magnum?
Yeah, that was the only good part, but I started to watch it and I was like, man, this is bad.
Yeah, I have that gun. I have that 44 Magnum.
Hey, I love the Magnum. I love Clint Eastwood, but I was like, wow.
Yeah, that was a crazy movie. You know, like I said, there was an occasional comedy, but there was like nothing consistent like those titles I just read, you know, and at least as far as the genre goes.
Well, you know what? I like men's movie that has a little bit of everything. Roadhouse, the original Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah, Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, there was convertibles, there was fights, there was a polar bear. I mean, you name it, it really had it all.
A polar bear. that's right, when he came to fight the guy at his house. I forget. My favorite character in that movie was not Patrick Swayze, which was, what was his name in Roadhouse?
I have no idea. Dalton?
Wait, Dalton.
Dutton.
Dalton.
Or...
You're something like Dalton. My favorite character was Sam Elliott.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Can see the forest for a tree. He's got that crazy, low, weird voice.
Yeah, he does. He's cool.
I love it when he shows up. You know, Dalton's getting the snot kicked out of him, and he shows up and kind of stands there and kind of laughs at him and calls him kid, and then he gets into it and just wastes these guys. Pretty funny.
Classic.
Waste these guys. Pretty funny. Anyhow, so, like I said, there was, like, no comedies, no chick flicks, but there's something that I want to touch on, and that's why I wanted to go here with taking some of these movies, because there's something that awakens, you know, the soul of men. There just is. And you know it. Remember when I was talking about John Eldridge's book, Wild at Heart, and he says in the book that every man, there's three things. He said, every man wants a battle to fight, an adventure to live, and a beauty to rescue. I mean, well, won't, there it is. I mean, that's what all these movies, these guys listed, you know, they have in common. It is absolutely core. So let's start. Let's go with my favorite movie of all time. And we'll touch on some other ones later, but it's Braveheart. You, man, don't play that music again right now or I will lose it. Maybe I'll give you a cue later if you got it. I'll give you a cue and I'll tell you where to do it. It might be kind of fun. Totally unscripted here. But that movie, that music, man, it will undo me like no other movie I've ever seen. I don't feel just a testosterone rush like I do from other movies, right? I feel this movie at my core. There's parts of this movie, like I said, all I have to do is just hear the music, and it takes me to a place where everything within me is just raw. I was watching it this morning as I was prepping the podcast. I think I said that earlier, and I messaged Stacy. She was working, and I said, I don't know if I can do this. She's like, why? I said, because I keep getting choked up. You know, that has to be funny to a woman who says, oh, you don't like The Notebook, right? But you'll get choked up at Braveheart. Yeah, because it's got all three of those. It's got the battle. It's got the adventure. And it's got that beauty to rescue. So if you're wondering why today's podcast is audio only and not video, now you know. Because I'd probably need this. It would be one of those, we have to get a sponsor by Puffs.
Right. Yeah.
I'd be like wiping away the tears. All right, let's get into it. So this movie, it takes place in Europe, and that's where William Wallace, you know, he's a young boy. I don't know how old he is. He's probably like 10 years old or something. And he's living in the country. You know, the hills are green, and he's spending time playing with his friend Hamish. Hamish is a brute, man. He's a bigger kid. You'll hear more about him in the next episode. But, you know, William Wallace, he's living with his father and his brother. Now, their enemy is the English, and the English don't like the Scots. They want them gone. And the people of these villages in Scotland, they're so afraid of the English that they're not willing to defend themselves. They will not step up, which makes the people weak, and it makes them real easy to prey upon. So in the opening scene, Wallace's father and brother, they go to check on this neighboring village, only to find the men, women, and children have been murdered, and they've been hung inside this stone building. I mean, it's really gruesome. It's hard to watch. And when the two men, his father and brother, Wallace's father and brother, are inside the building, you know, obviously they're in shock and on edge because they're wondering if, you know, the English are still nearby. They hear a noise in the back of this small stone structure, and there, standing with his mouth open and in shock, is young William Wallace. He'd followed his dad and his brother, and instantly, you know, William Wallace's father grabs him. He tucks his face into his shoulder to shield him from seeing anything more. But those images keep the young Wallace awake at night. And it's what ends up forging the man that he's going to end up becoming later on in the movie. You know, all of us have got images and experiences that form, you know, how we act, how we react, you know, how we will engage or if we disengage, you know, in our life. And it's those things that really matter to us that cause us to move forward. This competition that I got into, I've shared before. You know, I was bullied as a young kid. I graduated high school at 118 pounds. Well, it was my story that moved me to want to be or to do something different. And that's true for all of us. Well, there's no doubt that those people that were in the village that were still left alive, they want revenge. But they can't just rush into battle. They have to be smart. And something William Wallace's father would always say to him, that before you can fight, you have to learn how to use your brain first. In this scene early on, he looks at his son eye to eye, and he says, son, I know you can fight. He says, but it's our wits that make us men. That's pretty good advice. You know, little boys want to engage in the battle, and so do grown men. But many of us, we've lost sight with what the battle really is. Or we've maybe become so tame that we've let others or, you know, those who are in power walk all over us. And I think these movies that we're going to be talking about, these awaken the part of us that we would love to be able to live out of, you know, if we had the strength and the courage. I think it's one of those things within all of us. That's what we really want to be when we see these characters. You know, what is it that keeps us from being the hero in our own story? Because you are. God has a destiny and a purpose for you. You are God's workmanship created to do good things that he prepared in advance. But somehow we've lost sight of that. I mean, why do we have to fear anything? If we know that God is for us, who really can be against us? So anyhow, when William Wallace's father and brother leave to go fight against the English, you know, he and his friend, they set up, Hamish, they set up this pillar of rocks, like, you know, like as a kid, you set up a target, and they put these animal skulls on top of it as if those were like the heads of the enemy that they would be going to fight. And then they pick up rocks because that's all they had, and they start throwing them at it. And Wallace was really good at throwing rocks. Hamish, not so good. But that was their battle. You know, it's kind of like when we would go out and take pine cones to pretend they were, you know, grenades if we were playing army or something. But that conversation that William Wallace had with his father, what he didn't know was that would be the last time he would see them, he and his brother. So the two men, his father and brother, head off to battle. And they're going to be going against those who murdered these villages, but only to be killed themselves. So William's father, you know, he told him, he says, you know, you stay here and take care of the property, you know, even though young William wanted to go with him. So in the next scene, what you see is you see young William carrying this water bucket when he spots this like a double ox driven cart, you know, this like a flatbed kind of a thing with big wheels. And it's coming across this green meadow towards him being, you know, pulled by a couple of men in the lead. And he knows, you know, he turns away as if he's trying to deny the inevitable. But one of the men pulling the cart, you know, they call him over. And he finds that both his father and brother were killed. And now he's got to face losing the only family he knows of. And he is totally alone. I mean, can you imagine this 10 or 11-year-old kid or whatever he was? That's it. That's the only family he had. You never see anything about his mother in the movie. But seeing his father and brother killed, you know, it did something inside of him. When his father's buried, there's this little girl, and she's kind of standing there as the people are leaving. And this little girl, as her mother is taking her away, she lets go of her mother's hand and she runs back and she picks this purple flower and she hands it to him. And the two just stand there for a moment, just kind of looking into each other's eyes. He's all alone. And the two, as they would do this, it would kind of set the stage. Those of you who have seen the movie know what I'm talking about, but it sets this stage for a story that it's masterful. It moves me every time I see this. How everything ties together in this movie is crazy. So everybody leaves, and this man rides up, and it's William Wallace's uncle. And he comes up, and he says, Wallace, you know, now you're going to be going with me. And he teaches him how to speak Latin, and he takes care of him. But sometime that night, Wallace's father speaks to him in a dream, and he says, son, your heart is free. Have the courage to follow it. Well, the stage is now set. So when William Wallace comes outside after that dream, you know, it's dark, there's a fog, you know, it's just great background movie stuff. And there's these men playing the bagpipes at his father and brother's funeral on this hillside. And William's uncle explains that the men who are doing that, that's their way of saying goodbye. You know, I said in the podcast a week or two ago, I've got my band of brothers, and when it's time for me to be carried out, they're going to be the ones carrying me out because they've been carrying me all these years. Well, then the uncle tells Wallace that these men did the same thing for his own father's funeral when he was killed in battle. Well, he can really relate to what's kind of going on here. So he takes his sword and he hands it to young Wallace, and then he takes it back, you know, because Wallace is looking at this massive sword and he knows he wants to engage in the battle. He wants revenge. But the uncle tells Wallace, he says, I'll teach you how to use this, just like his father. He goes, but you have to learn to use this, as he pokes William on the forehead. You have to be using your wits first. Well, he has to leave, you know, everything now behind from his childhood. And I mean, everything. I mean, he has to grow up and he's got to do it right now. In this next scene, you know, it's been years since Wallace's father has been killed. And the King of England, whose name was Longshanks, he grants the nobles something called prima nocte. I think that's how you say it, meaning that they would get the first rights to Scottish women on their wedding night. I just can't even imagine that. You know, Longshanks, if he could get rid of them, if he couldn't get rid of them in battle, he was going to try to breed them out. That's why he did this. And it's just sick. But it becomes the very thing that would stir up the righteous anger of the Scots. The Scottish people needed to protect and defend their country. Wallace is now he's a full-grown man, and that little girl from the beginning of the movie, he comes across her in this little village. He falls in love with her. You know, she's a little one that gave him the flower at the funeral, and there's this celebration happening in the town where they end up reuniting. But the funny thing is he also reunites with his childhood friend, Hamish, and in that scene, I love this because Hamish is a big dude. I mean, William Wallace wasn't that big of a dude, but he was in shape. But Hamish is like a monster kind of a guy. You know, he's like this massive, like Viking looking dude. And so they're going to have this rock throwing contest. And Wallace throws this big rock, you know, as big as you could lift, not very far. And Hamish laughs and he picks up and he throws it a long way. Well, Hamish comes back and he's kind of teasing him, saying, well, you know, that's not going to do you very good in battle. And Wallace walks over and he says, I'll tell you what, I'll let you throw that big rock at me. I don't know how many paces he was. He was probably at about 7-8 yards away. And he goes, I won't move. Hamish goes, you'll move. Wallace says, no, I won't. The crowd is cheering. Hamish picks up this massive rock. It would crush him. It would crush a man. Throws it. It goes right over William Wallace's shoulder, and he never flinches. Wallace was remembering these things that his dad was telling him about. You know, you can go into battle, but you have to learn to use your wit first. As Wallace was walking over there before Hamish threw the rock, he picked up a small stone in his hands, probably about the size of a golf ball. And after Hamish misses, it's his turn. He chooses not to pick up the big rock. He takes that small one in his hand, aims, hits Hamish dead in the forehead, and he comes walking over. And Hamish had forgotten how good William Wallace was with throwing rocks from when they were kids. And he looks at Wallace and he goes, I forgot about the rocks. And he just kind of falls on his butt. Great scene. But over the next like 15 minutes of the movie, this story is about this romance between the little girl that he fell in love with, you know, so many years earlier. And it's a beautiful scene, you know, where they're constantly flirting with each other. They're kind of gazing at each other, you know, looking around the people over shoulders. And one night Wallace comes to court her, but her father isn't real crazy about this. Like most, you know, my now 15, Emma had a birthday, for those of you who have been following. My 14-year-old now is 15, and she has her first boyfriend. Oh, fun. But, you know, the next thing you know, he's trying to come in court, and the father doesn't, he's not ready. You know, he doesn't have a gun to polish or anything, but maybe he had a sword. I don't know. But the next thing you know, she runs out of this little stone home against what her parents wish. But she's an adult. She's not 15. She's probably 25. And she jumps on the horse with him, and it's pouring rain. And into this pouring rain, they ride off. And the courtship has begun. You know, the underscore music, that is all cue music now, Eric, that is always playing. That music I have never forgotten, and it moves me to my core. Every time I hear that music playing, it doesn't matter whether I'm watching the movie or if I was listening to the soundtrack, I get emotional. And the music from that scene is the music that I had played when Stacy and I got married. And I had it played while the guests were all being seated. And when I saw, oh, there it comes. And when I saw my friend Glenn and his wife show up, they were 400 miles away, I lost it. You know, Glenn, he was a leader from my men's group when I pastored back in Pennsylvania. And he and his wife, they traveled 400 miles to be there to celebrate with me that day. You know, Glenn and I went to 3 Wild at Heart boot camps, or 1 advanced platoon leader training in Colorado in the early 2000s. You know, we'd done Battle for the Hearts of Men for probably 4.5, 5 years. And for have him to show up in one of those holiest moments of my life, it just meant everything. He was like one of my band of brothers. So as Wallace, you know, drops her back home that night, he hands her this white cloth. And as she opens it up, he had preserved that little purple flower she had given him as a little girl at the funeral. He kept it this entire time. And when you see her face in the movie, when she realizes he had kept it all these years, I'm telling you, you will feel it. Because we all want to be loved like that. We all want a love like that. You know, it's that thing that to be known at your core, as deep as you can go, and to know that you're still wanted and pursued and cared for. That's what we all want. That's one of the things that I love about this movie. You've got the adventure. You've got the battle, right? But you've got this beauty who is being rescued. I love, and I'll talk about that in just a second. But anyhow, in the next scene, you know, Wallace sneaks away with her and he tells her, he says, I love you. He says, I always have. He says, I want to marry you. She looks at him. She's like, is that a proposal? He says, you know, I guess. But I quoted those words exactly when I proposed to Stacy, because she knew how powerful that scene was to me. That's how much that movie meant to me. You know, and how Wallace saw his beauty is how I saw Stacy. I still do. I can remember at our wedding when she mouthed the words from the very back of the aisle. She was getting ready to walk down. Everybody else had come down, and everyone turns around, and she mouths the words, "I love you," from the back of the aisle. And that music from Braveheart track had just been playing, and I lost it. That kind of passion is something that men and women want. It's not all about the battle, guys. It's not all about the adventure. It's also about having a beauty that you can do battle for. You see, the woman doesn't want to be the adventure, and so many men make the woman the adventure. But she doesn't want to be that, but she does want to be invited into it. She does want to be fought for, and more importantly, she wants to be romanced as if she's worth it. You know, Wallace does all these things for her, and it awakens her soul. You just have to see the movie. A few weeks ago, Stacy had made this kind of a left turn, Clyde, for a second here. She made this post on Facebook, and she wasn't intending it to be political, but a few people kind of twisted it that way, or maybe that's how they saw it that way, and they inserted their own comments kind of contrary to what she was saying. But that's what she had asked people not to do. She wasn't trying to stir up trouble. And she drew a boundary, you know, and there was a few people that didn't respect the boundary. And there was some pushback. But here's the thing. If you know Stacy's story, that she was left unprotected as a child, then if you know her, then you would know that that was probably crossing a line when she had asked for it not to be crossed. And here's the thing. I love my wife. I do know her story. She can fight her own battles most of the time. But occasionally there's a time where I will step in. Because that's not happening on my watch. So, anyhow, Wallace takes his bride to be away that night. You know, they have to kind of escape and get away from everybody. Because remember, there's that prima nocta thing that he's got to do it in the dark of the night. And so they go to this place out in the forest, and they've got a priest. And it happens at the foot of a cross that's made like on this little clump of moss in the light of the moon. And when the ceremony is over, you know, they do their vows, he carries her away. You know, by hiding their marriage, he had protected her. Well, the next day in the city market, remember, no one can know they're married. One of the English soldiers sees her, lures her off to the side. She tries to escape. He throws her into this little stone thatched building thing. And two other soldiers stand guard as he's trying to, you know, rape her. He's got her pinned down. And of course, here comes Wallace. He bursts through the door. You know, he's fighting off her attackers. He loads her on this horse, tells her to ride off, you know, where they can meet up later. And as he's trying to fight these guys and she's trying to escape, you know, they're kind of on different sides of this building. As she tries to go, she gets struck by one of these English guys' staffs. It knocks her off her horse, knocks her unconscious, and she gets captured again. But Wallace, not knowing what happens, he had said, you know, ride to this spot in the forest and I'll meet you there. So he goes once he escapes. But when he gets there, she's not there. Well, in the next scene, his bride, who was captured, they had tied her to a post. You know, they took her life. This one noble murdered her, tied to this post, as a statement for all those who were watching, do not resist. And as she dies, the white cloth that Wallace had given her falls from her hand to the ground. You know, and after killing her, this noble guy invites this. He calls Wallace the scrapper. He goes, "I invite that scrapper to come to me." Well, of course, you know, the camera now pans to the top of this hill. And there you see, coming down from the top of this village, you see William Wallace riding on his horse alone. It's the hero in the story, right? But he's just lost the love of his life. And he's going to get revenge. You know, he's alone, and as he comes riding down this little dirt path through these little thatched village buildings, his arms are out and open, and his hands are out. It's like he's coming to surrender, and everyone's kind of watching to see what's going to happen. And as he gets closer, he puts his hands back behind his head as if he's turning himself in. And you remember, Wallace has real long hair in this movie, so you can't see what he's got behind him. And as he reaches his hands back like he's getting ready to put his hands to surrender, he has a two-sectional staff tucked in the back of his outfit, whatever you want to call it, he was wearing. And he comes out swinging and just nailing these guys, trying to take him captive. And as they attack him with their swords, you know, he blocks it. He's got a deer antler. He catches one of the swords with him. Then he gets the guy with the deer antler, and he kills these men that are trying to take him. But seeing the unjustly death of his bride, You know, and the villagers knew that they were in love. And now that they can see that Wallace is having to fight against the English alone because no one is going to lift a finger, the people finally get moved to finally stand up and fight back. And so they get involved. You know, Wallace's passion and righteous anger, it created a resistance that would unite the country. And we'll talk about that in this next episode that's coming up. But what I want to say, you know, at the end of this today is what I hope you take away from today's podcast, where we talked about Braveheart, is that you have to be willing to get involved when you see evil happening. You can't just keep putting it on other people. No, this kind of stuff is happening all around us. It's in our schools. It's in our government. It's in the stuff that we let into our house, right? So what are you willing to do? You know the difference between right and wrong. So are you willing to stand up in the face of tyranny? Or are you going to stay silent until it's too late? Are you willing to let your voices be heard? You know, are you going to fight for your families, for your communities, and for our nation? It's time to choose. We're going to go deeper into the rest of Braveheart in the next episode and how, you know, Wallace is able to put together an army of his countrymen who gather in the face of tyranny and how it doesn't just change a country, but it changes the hearts of warriors who then become a part of the resistance and become dangerous for good. Remember that when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he is no longer held captive by the opinions of others and cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous. Dangerous for good because he's been unleashed. We'll see you next time.